How did Canada's Navy start?
It was the result of a decision taken in 1910 by Laurier's government to start a navy, and it began with the acquisition of two rather elderly Royal Navy cruisers, which grew into a sizable force, though rather a motley one, during the First World War.
Now, the purpose of the book is, well, what's the real purpose behind the book?
It was designed to incorporate all that we had squirreled away over the course of years, mostly, in my case, photographs and a certain amount of statistics. In John's case, a great deal of historical background. And we've been distressed, I guess, that we were, in a sense, keeping this all to ourselves, not through any selfish motive, but simply because up till now we'd had no way of disseminating it.
Now, you had a book published entitled Canada's Fighting Ships, which was published when, in 1975, was it, or 76?
1975, yes. And that was a start. I didn't realize at the time it would ever grow into anything as big as what we have now managed to do. In fact, I should give the publisher of that book the credit for the existence of this one, in a way, because it was his idea to do it, and we were well on our way toward completing it when he ran into financial difficulties with the preceding book on the launching pad, and had to give ours up, I'm sure, reluctantly. And we found Collins after several unsuccessful tries with other publishers, in a rather amusing way, actually. My daughter and the daughter of Gordon Simpson, who was a Collins salesman, shared a room at the University of Guelph a year ago, and it was directly, quite literally directly, as a result of that coincidence that Collins and ourselves got together. It's another reason for our doing it, in fact, that we both felt, as many people do, that Canada's role in the Battle of the Atlantic, although very considerable, has never been really given proper credit, and I think the book will convey that impression. It's perhaps of interest too that Collins was intended to be the publisher of a book somewhat similar to this, which was planned in the mid-1960s by the former chief naval historian Ted Russell and Admiral Pullen, who has written the foreword to the book. They abandoned that idea, which was a fortunate thing for John and me. 498 paragraphs, which is a very well-illustrated book, and contains 240 well-documented pages. So the interesting thing is it's got the life histories of the ships in capsule form, together with a fascinating array of tables showing such things as the organization of Atlantic convoys during the war. In fact, I should think it's, if I may say so, almost enough to satisfy a naval historian. I don't think they've ever been satisfied, but what do you think yourself? Now, looking back on this book, has it achieved its purpose? I probably shouldn't say it, but I think yes. I think we've achieved the purpose very well, and I think a particular compliment is should be paid to John Burgess for the charts, the organizational status charts, as we have called them, which detail for each month of the war the whereabouts, the group to which the ship belonged, the activity in which it was engaged, of all our destroyers, frigates, corvettes, minesweepers, and other ships, to a total, I think, of something like 300 ships. It really, it's an amazing job of condensation, and one that still boggles my mind when I look at it.
But you must have been very touched by yourself about the past, and also rather shaken, I imagine, as we all are, by the present.
Yes, I've always been rather saddened, David, by the low estate to which the Navy has sunk, not to mention our armed forces in general. It's no fault of the personnel, certainly. It's partly the times, and it's partly, I suppose, a government whose priorities run in other directions. I would say mistakenly, but I'm no strategist, but it seems to me if we're going to be a part of the NATO organization at all, we should pull our weight, and that should include a Navy that can field a seagoing force of more than half a dozen ships, if that.
Our first Navy in 1910 was almost more firepower than we did now have now.
So almost literally true in a sense. Certainly, we would be much less well prepared for a war now than we were in 1939, and heaven knows we were badly prepared then.
Now, today's navies, well, the biggest said the usual with submarines, nuclear submarines, and all the rest of it, and glaring at each other through radar eyes. We have submarines in the Canadian Navy now, I think, right, saying three. But how about our very first submarines, the ones we really never heard of as a general public? I mean, how did those come about, Ken?
They were our third and fourth ships, David, and it was rather intriguing how we got them. Sir Richard McBride, the then Premier of British Columbia, realizing, as everyone else did, I think, at the time that a war was imminent, heard that two submarines, which were under construction for Chile in Tacoma, were up for grabs because the Chilean government had defaulted on the deal. And Sir Richard hastened down and bought them, and they were transferred by stealth at sea on the very eve of the war. In fact, they didn't even arrive back at Victoria until the war had begun. And luckily for him, the federal government ratified the purchase and gave him back his money. So that submarines were, as you say, among our very first acquisitions. Perhaps interestingly, it was two former German submarines that were our first post-war acquisition of submarines. U-190 and U-889 served rather briefly with the Canadian forces before they were, in one case, destroyed at sea, more or less for fun, and in the other case turned over to the U.S. Navy.
The Canadian really large capital ships, well, HMCS Bonaventure.
Well, the story is a sad one and concerns the end of her life, really. She was given what was termed a midlife refit, which meant that she should have had several years to go, and a good many million dollars were spent on the process. And then, for reasons never, I think, made public, certainly never understood by me, she was sold for scrap a year and a half later for a million, I think a million and a half
during the Second World War, and possibly the First World War. Some very luxurious ones, gentlemen's private yachts, the luxury type. Can you tell me something about those?
Yes, we had, I think, five of those during the First World War, a couple of them quite large, and probably quite sumptuous. In the Second World War, before we had corvettes, the corvettes I suspect were building at the time, but we had nothing much in the way of coastal escorts at all. It was decided to see what we could find in terms of large yachts to use as escort ships, and only two turned up on the local market that were considered of much use at all. One was the Ambler, a Canadian ship, and the other was the Saint Fer, which belonged to the Duke of Sutherland. The American yacht market was inspected and done by a rather roundabout way. The Canadian government sequestered 14 yachts from Canadian owners with no real intention of keeping them at all, and thus bereft of their ships, the owners went south of the border, bought 14 American yachts to replace them, and then when they arrived back in Canada, the Canadian government said, oh, look, these are better than the ones we took from you in the first place, so we'll give them back to you and we'll have these. And that was how it was done. And they filled the gap quite nicely until the advent of the corvettes. They were known in some circles as the animal class destroyers because they had names, they had animal names.
I'm asking you about things like this. Who helped you in this work?
Well, a lot of people. I should mention particularly Peter Robertson. I have thanked him in the book, and I don't mind at all doing so again. He works with the Public Archives of Canada, and his particular concern is military historical photographs. And over the years, he has always been very kind and attentive to my needs. I do have thousands of photographs of ships of all kinds, not just Canadian. And so it was, when the time finally came, there was no terrific difficulty in finding suitable ones for use in the book among what I had. I had little difficulty finding some others, and broadcast appeals in various ways for privately held, privately taken photographs, some 104 photographs of the photographs in the book were from sources other than the federal government. If I may say so, I'm still on the lookout for such photographs. It seems to me that this is the last opportunity before another generation decides that these are junk. And if anyone listening to this interview should have or know of photographs of ships taken at sea during the war, I'd be delighted to hear from it.
That was Mr. Ken McPherson, the author of The Ships of Canada's Naval Forces, 1910 to 1981.